hey, is this the savior of humanity? Is this what's going to finally cure cancer? Is this what's finally going to fix all the issues with the economy and put everybody on some, you know, universal stipend to where we're never going to have to work anymore? And Seth, you and I can just sit back and create on our computers for the rest of our lives and never lift a finger, you know?
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I would normally be here with my co-nerd Cesar, but he is on a short sabbatical. So I want to ask for you to, for your prayers for him. He is currently looking for a job, and the job market in Peru right now isn't really good. But I'm not alone. I am joined again by Lee Sandeno. And since our last recording, since our last episode, Lee has come on as a new member of the That Nerdy Catholic team. So, Lee, I want to officially welcome you to the team.
Thank you, Seth. It's great to be a part of this. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's the it didn't take too long to realize that you would be a good part of the team after the, you know, the last couple of episodes that we've recorded, because, you know, you coming from a background of IT, having an IT guy, a programmer and an engineer, is a great combination. But also, it was just clear to me that your nerdy imagination is right in par with me and Cesar. And I think that there's going to be a lot of really interesting conversations we're going to be having.
Absolutely. That's what I love about this show, too. It just gives you an outlet for all of those nerds out there, that you really can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason I like doing these is that there's a lot of fun that we're having with it. Yeah. And we're serious about our faith, but we can also see parallels between a lot of things in science and sci-fi and all those things with, you know, where our faith can fit into it.
Well, and I think it's fun too, you know, we were just talking about Cesar, just the practical side of things as well. I mean, we've all had IT jobs. We all know what it's like to be looking for work, you know, especially in day and age when we're talking AI, which is kind of the perfect segue into the encyclical that we're going to be diving into. But it's just neat to meet other people and to be able to discuss these kind of lived experiences that we've had, and, you know, how this all can fit into, you know, the bigger view of our Catholicism and how we can inform, you know, and help shape the world that we live in, you know, in a more appropriate way. You know, there's a lot of secularism in the IT space, you know that. So just being able to come in with a Catholic point of view is really special.
Yeah. So today we're going to be jumping into a deeper look into Magnifica Humanitas. And today we're going to be looking at the introduction. In the next 7 weeks, we're going to be going over every single section of the encyclical. But before we jump into Magnifica Humanitas, I want to remind you, if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. And you can go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to help support us financially. Our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic have gone up, and any financial support you can give us would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join as a monthly supporter. And as I said earlier, you know, Cesar is looking for a job right now. So any financial support, especially if we can get some support to him while he's looking for a job, would be really helpful. Yeah, so today we're looking at the introduction. And one of the things I was thinking about as I was preparing for this episode is this phrase that is used by Saint Augustine, ever ancient, ever new. And the quote that it comes from is, he says, "Late have I loved you, O beauty, ever ancient, ever new, late have I loved you." And so he's talking about God, that God is ever ancient, ever new. God is eternal, but he is always working in new ways in the world. And it made me think about that, because this encyclical, you know, popes have been writing encyclicals for a long time. And every time a new encyclical comes out, it is pulling from the ancient wisdom of the church, but it is also coming up with a new look at how that those teachings, that wisdom, is to be used in the world today, because the world is always changing.
Yeah. And I love that too. I think Pope Leo gets into it when we get into the introduction, just kind of this this parallel of rerum novarum, which of course is kind of this idea of new things and being able to approach the world with this new sort of idea. I talked a couple of months ago about rerum novarum, just the Industrial Revolution, with another group of folks. And we talked about how really the new things can almost translate to revolution. It's a revolution on top of a revolution. So you've got this new approach to thinking and looking at things. And we're seeing that play out a little bit with Pope Leo. I think he calls it res novae, which he doesn't ever technically define. He defines new things as rerum novarum, but we're talking about the res novae, the new thing of our time, right? Which is not this Industrial Revolution anymore, but this is a revolution of kind of the digital age, the knowledge worker age, and then moving beyond into AI. Yeah. So I love that quote, because I think that really kind of speaks to our history to make sure that, like you said, the dignity of every person is safeguarded and justice is promoted. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first quote that I wanted to read is from the first paragraph. Each generation inherits the task of shaping its own era, of guiding history to become a place where the dignity of every person is safeguarded, justice is promoted, and fraternity is made possible. Yet every era also runs the risk of creating an inhuman and more unjust world. This starts from looking at the responsibility that each person has in building a world that is closer to the city of God. And I think it's important here to say that what the church says about this idea of building the city of God on earth, the church doesn't take the stance that it is all up to humans to create the city of God. It's not like we are, from the sweat of our brow, are able to build the city of God. But the church also doesn't have the stance that we're just sitting here waiting for God to work. We are called to cooperate with God in this building of a better world.
Right. Right. Well, and part of that, I think it was Gaudium et Spes that's quoted there in that first paragraph. And it's really beautiful. After your specific quote there, it talks about every era runs that risk of creating an inhuman and more unjust world. And whenever humanity is in danger of marring its true identity, what do we do as Christians? You know, we're not even sure where to look anymore. Well, we lift our eyes to God. You know, the only, you know, what they quote here, only in the mystery of the Word made flesh that the mystery of humanity truly becomes clear. And right off the bat, you know, just cracking this off the bat, I love how Pope Leo says, look, if we're confused about where we should go as a human race, or we're confused about some of these questions about identity and about what it means to be sentient and all of these things, it's lift your eyes to the incarnate God. That's going to give us the answer.
Yeah. And the fact that God became man and dwelt among us, that is the model that we are to look to. You know, we are to be like Christ. Yeah, and that, I mean, that's why we're called Christians. We're to be like Christ.
Yep, absolutely. And he talks a little bit in paragraph two about the aspirations of humanity, you know, just what we're meant to do together, you know, engaging together in a dialogue with men and women of our time, seeking these new paths of promoting dignity of life for all. Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, you know, every generation, I'm sure if you're not really a history buff, like I'm sure some nerds are, is this, well, it's just our generation. We've never faced something like this before. Oh, it's, you know, it's, you know, every generation, you know, that's another thing.
It's ever ancient, ever new.
That's right. Yep. Absolutely. There's always a challenge that comes up. There's always a challenge before us to create this, as Christians, you know, this city of God, like you were just talking about, Seth, that was beautiful. And how can we approach this in our generation and not think this was my parents' problem or this is going to be my kids' problem? No, we're here on earth. Yeah. It's an exciting time, but we're here, you know, and we're the ones that are kind of shaping the future and able to, well, when we have a choice, like Pope Leo's saying, is do we lift our eyes to the incarnate God so that our humanity becomes clear? Or are we getting confused in sort of this AI slop that we're seeing everywhere of how do you define humanity?
Yeah. Well, every generation thinks that it's in the end times because of some huge monumental challenge that's before them.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. So the next quote that I have here, I wanted to look at paragraph 4, and this is a longer quote. In recent years, it has become increasingly evident how rapidly and profoundly digitization, artificial intelligence, and robotics are transforming our world. Technology should not be considered in itself as a force antagonistic to humanity. On the contrary, it has formed part of our history since the beginning as profoundly human reality linked to the autonomy and freedom of man. Actually, I'm going to stop there. I love this look at technology as just a part of humanity. You know, it's so easy to think of technology as the other, you know, the thing out there. But going all the way back to when we first made tools out of stone.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that is one of the defining things about humanity is that we make tools and we make ever more complex tools.
Well, and doesn't this speak to our creativity? You know, I mean, just because we're calling it technology and it isn't, you know, creating tools where we can create a wheel that's a circle and we're able to, you know, and we're making this machine. And I think for some people, technology is this just a bunch of bits and a bunch of zeros and ones. But really, this just talks about our creative element as humans. And that, well, that's why you and I are in this IT space. You know, we're seeing this as, well, this is a lot of fun. You know, this is helping enhance life. You know, this is something that we see the benefits of, we can nerd out
absolutely.
On.
And
so it isn't just a throwaway. Well, this is the digital side of the world and we need to get rid of it and all become Luddites. And I think you and I, Seth, are saying, no, that's absolutely not true. This is something that was created from the ingenuity of humanity to help benefit, you know, us and society. And we don't, it's not, hey, let's not throw it away, but how do we use this, you know, for, I love that line, linked to the autonomy and freedom of man. You know, the technology is used to help things, make things better, to free us. And there could be a lot of great benefits, a lot of dangers, but a lot of great benefits.
Yeah. I love that perspective that it's the creating of technology is not just a pragmatic thing.
Right.
It is an outlet of our creativity. I love the times when I can spend a few hours writing out text into a text editor and then have it do something.
Yeah.
You know, when you're writing code, you're writing a story.
You're building
in this
something.
Specific format. And you're building something. And then you can either open up in a browser or compile it and you have something that does something.
Right.
And when Cesar and I did the series, the two series on the history of math and the history of science, it is really a history of the creativity of humanity and the desire of humanity to understand the world better. And there's a love of it. There's a desire.
Right.
It's not just we have to do this. It is a desire to understand the world around us. And it's a desire to understand God.
That's right. Because it's the creative process that's bringing us closer to the creator. Yeah. And, you know, through all of this that we're doing, it's an opportunity for us to look at, you know, God's creation in a different way. And so I think this is a great point. Is I think a lot of people that I've talked to even in recent weeks about this encyclical, it's kind of like all the digital things. See, this is the problem. We just need to all throw away our computers and go back to. But I do like this approach of no, these are tools, right? There are a lot of them you can't physically see like you would, you know, a hammer and a screwdriver. But these are things that are, maybe if you want to finish reading that quote, I think Pope Leo kind of gets to it. This is something that really deeply affects our collective imagination and our decision-making process. So I don't know if you want to hit that.
Yeah, sure. I'll read the second half. Over the centuries, technological development has significantly improved the living conditions of humanity. At the same time, each phase of progress has also revealed the ambiguity of tools that can cause harm when not oriented toward the good. Today, however, we find ourselves facing a new situation. The power and prevalence of emerging technologies are interwoven into the fabric of daily life, shaping decision-making processes and deeply affecting the collective imagination. Never has humanity had such power over itself.
You know, I want to note something really quick here, that just the personification that's happened in the second part of the paragraph, where Pope Leo is giving, he's giving power to technology, mm-hmm. you know, and yes. he's using that specific word twice, right? So yes. this isn't like, well, I'll go back to just the rudimentary tools. This isn't like, well, we created this hammer and look at the power the hammer has. Well, it's more of an efficiency there.
Right.
We're talking about almost a completely different level, Seth, at this point. This isn't a rudimentary tool. This is something that is even personified as it's got a power to it. You know, it's able to shape lives. And so the responsibility level, look, with great power
comes great responsibility.
Right. So once you, I mean, right when I read that in this encyclical, I was thinking, oh, he said it right there, with great power. Right?
Are you saying Pope Leo is Spider-Man?
I think he was maybe, I feel like he was inspired by Stan Lee a little bit in this paragraph.
Yeah. And you think about the power that the internet has had, and the internet is passive, but the fact that since the creation of the internet, and especially the last 25 years, with the growth of all these businesses that are based solely on the internet.
Yep.
And now you have something that's akin to that, and yet it is also more active than the internet. And my kids are 11 and 13, and they're growing up in a world where you need to know about the internet to do any sort of work.
Yeah.
My younger daughter, well, she has said a number of times, like, well, just ask Google. Google knows it. And I would say, all right, Google doesn't know anything. But right. the personification that she gives to things like Google, it's like, well, Google knows everything. Just ask Google.
Yeah. Just Google it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the platform that the internet has given everyone to. So there's that as well. You know, there's this creative energy that has been taking place since the dawn of humanity, right? And we're constantly building, we're constantly reiterating. We're you know, the great cities. We're going to talk a little bit about a wall even around Jerusalem here in a little bit. But there's these things that humanity's building that are good. You know, they're just really good. I think the difference with technology, though, is you've given everybody, like you just said, with the internet, everyone's got a presence, everyone's got a platform. And now, you know, the knowledge side of humanity, we've become more and more connected over the last even decade, which is something that is absolutely, I would say, well, it's just never happened in the history of humanity before. And the dawn of the internet, you know, and running cables across the ocean, and we've got this, you know, almost speed of light type of transmission that we're going back and forth between countries. I mean, that's never happened before. So we've got a closer tie as humans, as cultures, and that can be really good. And it can also be really challenging.
Right. Well, and you also have the ability to start a business with very little.
That's right.
And have a much greater reach to customers, to clients, to, you know, to listeners. You know, the fact that we can be putting out this podcast and anyone in the world can listen to it. I'm uploading a new episode today, and the fact that I can spend 10 minutes uploading an episode to the internet, and then within a few minutes after that, anyone in the world can access it. It's incredible.
Right. It's something also, the economy of the things. I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine. We were kind of geeking out about some old business books that we used to read, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and things like that. And, you know, there's this idea of the law of the harvest, right? That's something that always colored everything that humans did. And you could even take it to the business world, and at least back in the 90s, you know, and everything else, of this idea of the law of the harvest. What you plant and what you seed is what you'll reap and what you'll grow. And with the internet, you know, we don't have that same law of the harvest. You know, you're saying, hey, I can start a business today. You know, within 30 seconds, if I've got something that people want, I can start making a ton of money and retire in the next 5 years, you know, if I happen to hit something that people are really interested in. Right. So this whole idea of planting, you know, and letting grow and cultivating is kind of out the window, which maybe is a fun separate conversation to have. But just the speed of things, I guess, is the point, right? Yeah. The speed at which things are happening.
Yeah, and thinking about, you know, the shirts and other things that we sell on our website, we use a print-on-demand service. And so you use a service like that, all you have to do is you create the images, and then you upload them, create the product, get it connected to your website, and within an hour, you can have an online store where you're selling physical goods, and you haven't done anything to actually make them.
Right.
It's a great opportunity, but going back to what you're saying, there's so much opportunity, and yet at the same time, you're not as invested if you just put an hour into it.
Right. And I love this line of this paragraph that you're reading is the power and prevalence of emerging technologies are interwoven into the fabric of daily life, shaping decision-making processes and deeply affecting our collective imagination. So even our decision-making processes every day, like you're just mentioning, you know, kind of t-shirts on demand and being able to build an e-commerce site and things like that, is it's shaping all of our decision-making processes. Yeah. And we're almost... Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll get into it in a little bit, Seth, but are we slaves to that, right? Are we, have we thrown ourselves into this speed of the internet and speed of technology and now speed of AI to where we as humans don't have as much of a choice to be able to step back and cultivate like we used to? So
yeah,
maybe ponder that one for a bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we're going into this, I'm realizing that I don't think we can do justice to this document in 7 episodes. And just looking at what we have today, and you know, there's so much to say just on the introduction.
Right.
So we have a section here just on the middle 3 paragraphs.
Yep.
And this is looking at the idea of the Tower of Babel and the walls of Jerusalem. I want to save that for our next episode.
Sure.
I think we should do a second episode on the introduction, just diving deep into that, because that really is one of the key metaphors for this whole encyclical.
Right.
So, and there's so much to be said about that I don't want to give it just a little bit of time. So why don't we jump after that, and we'll really dive deep into that one in our next episode. But looking at the last line, a paragraph 4, never has humanity had such power over itself. Back to your quoting Peter Parker, with great power comes great responsibility. It's so easy to fall on either side of, we now have this power and we are going to shape the world in our own image, and the technology is going to be our salvation. Or to fall on the other side, as you're saying, well, we just need to get rid of all technology, move back to the farm, and live off the land, and forsake this technological antichrist that we've been building.
Right.
Oh, and have you ever seen what was the name of that movie? It was
A Thief in the Night.
It was a movie that came out in the 70s about the end times. And I think it was the second movie. It was all looking at the evangelical view of the end times. But the second movie, there was the Beast. And the Beast was a mainframe computer who had all the information about all humanity.
Yeah.
And you had these shots of this huge room with all these computers with the reel-to-reel tapes.
Wow. Well, and I think that, you know, the book of Revelation, that a lot of what we're talking about with AI, with knowledge, we just touched a little bit on, everybody has a platform, we've connected, we're more closely connected than we ever have been, does play a little bit into that narrative. If you were to read Revelation like that, of kind of this end times sort of collective, you know, we're waiting for this antichrist to come and sort of join everybody together and be the savior of the world and all that. And, you know, I have read articles before that have talked about, look, this could be the danger of AI, even if it isn't a person. You know, we're looking at it as this, hey, is this the savior of humanity? Is this what's going to finally cure cancer? Is this what's finally going to fix all the issues with the economy and put everybody on some, you know, universal stipend to where we're never going to have to work anymore? And Seth, you and I can just sit back and create on our computers for the rest of our lives and never lift a finger, you know? So it's it's this idea of like, oh, we're always looking for a savior. We're always looking for something, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, it was the machines. You know, before that, it was maybe a king or a country. You know, now it's AI, and people are constantly looking for the savior. And again, I'll point to that first couple of sentences in this encyclical is and what Pope Leo said. It, whenever we're confused about that, looking for a savior of humanity, we as Christians, what do? We lift our eyes up. We look at the true savior.
Yeah, I want to go on now to paragraph 5 then, because that really goes into that.
A really good tie-in, yeah.
Yeah. As Pope Francis warned, we must realistically ask ourselves who holds the power today and how they use it. It must also be recognized that nuclear energy, biotechnology, information technology, knowledge of our own DNA, and many other abilities which we have acquired have given those with the knowledge and especially the economic resources to use them an impressive dominance over the whole of humanity and the entire world. In the past, it was largely up to the state to guide and direct innovation. Today, however, the main drivers of development are private, often transnational parties that are endowed with resources and the capacity to intervene that surpass those of many governments. Technological power thus takes on an unprecedented, predominantly private aspect, which makes it even more challenging to discern, govern, and direct such power toward the common good. So, going back to what you were just saying, that we have always had this idea that this next technology will fix all of our problems.
Right.
As if the technology itself were an entity.
Yep.
But as this is saying, and Pope Leo says it in other places as well, we need to look at who is behind the technology. And actually, before we go in and talk about this, I want to read one more quote. In paragraph 9, Pope Leo says, "In the abstract, technology in and of itself is not a solution to humanity's problems, just as it is not inherently evil. In practice, however, technology is never neutral, because it takes on the characteristics of those who devise, finance, regulate, and use it." Right. So technology is not this independent entity that can either save us or destroy us. We always have to look at who's behind it.
Right. So there's a lot going on in this paragraph 5. I'd encourage people to look into this paragraph too, because I took a couple notes here, Seth, when I was reading through it, because I love what this paragraph is getting at, and we see it absolutely playing out today. So when Pope Leo is talking about, I think he's quoting Pope Francis at this point, where he's saying that it's impressive dominance, these economic resources and impressive dominance over the whole of humanity and the entire world. And the Pope Leo goes on to say, in the past, it was largely up to the state to guide and direct innovation, but today it's these main drivers of these things are often private. Okay, so what is he saying here? Well, we think about Christopher Columbus, right?
Yep.
And we think about how, you know, he's going on to discover the new world, and he's Italian, right? And what does he do? It was before the Italian state, but he was Genovian. And before he goes on to do his thing, he needs to get it funded, right? So he goes to a bunch of different countries and finally lands on Spain, and he gets the money he needs. And here we're seeing, and I took a note of this, Elon Musk just became a trillionaire. So the first trillionaire that we've ever seen on planet Earth, you know, compare that to what innovation looked like back in Christopher Columbus's time. We've got a guy who's got more money than anybody on the planet. Actually, I took some notes here. Only about 20 countries in the world have larger economies than Elon Musk as a person. So there's 190 countries that have less, including really dominant countries like Sweden and Norway and Saudi Arabia and some others have less of a GDP than Elon Musk does. Yeah. And, you know, I also want to mention too, with not to knock on Elon, because there's a lot of really cool things that he does. I think for any nerd, we're just like, yes, SpaceX. But we look at the war with Ukraine and Russia. you know, singularly, here's a guy who's got a ton of money and a bunch of satellites. And he says, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and give Ukraine internet and just completely shift the narrative of that war. Yeah. One person, Seth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and this is exactly what Pope Leo is saying, is a lot of the main drivers of development are private. And this makes it a lot more challenging to discern and to govern these things, because we are so dependent on whether or not Elon Musk or any other trillionaire that shows up who has this technology and this power, whether or not they're crazy.
Right.
You know, because they really just hold the world in their hands.
Yeah, which is what makes any time you see Elon Musk jump up on a stage and do something really weird, like, oh no. If it were most people, we'd be like, who cares? That's a weird guy. But when you have that much wealth and that much power as one person, and that's not an elected official, you know, he has that much power because of his wealth.
That's right.
And no one said, oh, this is a guy that we really like and we want to be in charge of all this stuff.
Right. You know, what, not voted in, right? This is just someone that's built his economy around a lot of things that people wanted. You know, we talked about that, being able to start a business pretty quickly and you find the right thing and all of a sudden you become really rich. And again, there's a lot of brilliant things that are happening out of Elon Musk and, you know, Starlink and Tesla and some of those other things. But just think of Anthropic, right? Just the size and the scale of Anthropic and being able to deal with like the Pentagon a couple of months ago. And I just think when we're saying directing their power, are they, right? So the individuals and the private entities, are they directing their power toward the common good? And maybe the more interesting question is, do we even have a say in it? You know, would we even be able to do anything about it if, say, Elon or OpenAI or whatever decided that, hey, we don't want to use this for good?
Yeah.
Which I think is even more interesting. I know we're kind of going off on paragraph five here, but I put a couple of quotes of what OpenAI has said recently in some of their documentation, and they sound a lot like Pope Leo. With a key distinction, Pope Leo starts with, lift our eyes toward the incarnate word, toward Christ. You know, that's what's going to define our humanity. OpenAI comes in and they're kind of saying, well, let's just give everyone the power. So they're looking at this kind of power mode that we have and, you know, great responsibility and everything else. And it's like, well, let's just give everyone an AGI. That's going to solve everything. If everyone on Earth had their own personal AGI, then we'll all be equal and we'll all be fine. But just a quote from OpenAI on a document that they put out just recently, they say that future will not happen automatically. Transformative technologies can concentrate power, or they can broaden it. They can make life easier for a few, or they can expand opportunities for many. Our approach, OpenAI's, is rooted in the belief that AI should work for people, helping them pursue their own goals, increasing their capabilities, and distributing the benefits of this technology as widely as possible. Which I think is a really interesting stance. You read through the encyclical, they sound a lot like Pope Leo, Seth.
Yeah.
At least you've got OpenAI coming out saying, we see the risks, but we also see the rewards in allowing this to be open to everyone or to the benefits of humanity instead of bottling it up with just a few companies or a few trillionaires.
Yeah. Well, and they also sound like Richard Stallman and Linus Torvald. The fact that looking at that idea of even calling it open AI calls back to the creation of open source software.
Right.
You know, the fact that this is one thing that's really encouraged me. And Cesar and I looked into this a bit when we were looking at the issues of security around AI, but looking at the open source free software movement. And I would say most people don't know that their life depends on open software every day. You know, the fact that people are going to websites that run on Apache, you know, and an Apache is an open source web server.
Yeah.
So this idea that someone decides that they want to write a program and they could make millions off of it, or they could share it with the world. And the fact that the model of open source software is you can download the software and use it for free. You can also modify it and use the modified version. You can also redistribute the modified version. That really is putting the power in the hands of everyone.
Sure. I would love to put a pin in this conversation too for in the future, just to talk about vibe coding for a little bit. Because, you know, you get on Reddit, you know, and you read these people and they're like, hey, guys, I did the world a favor and I created this amazing app. And you know what? I'm going to give it to everyone for free. And then you usually see the comments that are like, yeah, and that took you about, what, 30 seconds to build with ChatGPT? I mean, come on, you're not, you didn't do anything.
Right, right.
So it's, I love what you just said too of what is truly open software. What is truly, right. you know, beneficial and maybe even framework software that we're building on top of, right? You know, that's kind of this creative space versus these things that people all of a sudden think like, you're welcome world. I just vibe coded something and boy, that drives me nuts, Seth. I just cannot. I can't.
Well, yeah, I'm the next Linus Torvald. And then, no, absolutely. I think that would definitely be a great conversation to have. And I do want to dive deeper at some point into the whole world of open source software.
Yeah.
But then the question is, can that happen with AI, especially with all of the resources that it needs for training? Is that something, I mean, you would have to have someone like Elon Musk or Sam Altman to say, I've built all of this and yet I'm going to put it into a public trust for that to happen.
That's a great point. You know, there's another quote I put down here from Anthropic from that pretty interesting sort of open letter that they came out with. And it said, if we get this right, Anthropic, so this is talking about the company, right? If we get this right, AI can become a foundation for greater productivity, creativity, scientific progress, and economic opportunities for the many. And we will achieve our mission to ensure AGI benefits all of humanity. But to your point, I think they're on the right track, though, because they're like you just said, is there some sort of trust? Is there some sort of coalition that's able to say, here's this thing that we know is absolutely powerful, and to ensure its future success and it doesn't fall into the wrong hands of absolutely crazy people, and we can put some guardrails and some walls around it. Here's what needs to happen, because we know how beneficial this is to humanity. So it's hopeful that not only Pope Leo with this encyclical, but there's other, you know, these large organizations that are also coming out in the same tune and kind of saying, hey, look, we've got an opportunity to get this right. And I would love someone to come out with the idea of what they think is right. Is it Anthropic is doing all of it? Is it Elon Musk is doing all of it? You know, is it? Yeah. I think Donald Trump just signed something recently in the last couple of weeks about wanting to put some guardrails around AI models. Is it the government is going to suddenly come in? And a lot of interesting questions.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that we had talked about before that Sam Altman was sitting right next to Pope Leo when he was revealing this encyclical, and that Sam Altman actually looked at him and said, I am glad that the church and that you are doing this, because as the creator of OpenAI, and I know that it's so easy as a nerd to do this when you're really getting into something, you're just thinking about the problem you can solve and how to do it. And it's so easy to go right past the, should I be doing it?
Yeah.
And so the fact that Sam Altman is saying we need the church to be the conscience of the people that are actually doing the work of AI and is welcoming his, you know, the church's views and guidance.
Right. You know, that's a great point. And you just reminded me of something, you know, we're talking in 2026 right now, but remember, I mean, Google, they said this, you know, back in 1999, you know, it wasn't even the term.
Don't be evil.
That's right. Exactly. You know, do no evil. And it was their motto. It was written on the walls. It was something that they were telling investors constantly. I mean, this was built into kind of the DNA of the company is, look, do no evil. That was 27 years ago. So it's hopeful that Anthropic is coming out, you know, and even OpenAI, and they're saying similar things, right? They're saying, look, we know that we're wielding a whole lot of power. We've got a whole lot of power over a lot of information, a lot of people's information, a lot of dependencies for people. And we're deciding that this needs to be something that's formed for the greater good. So it's hopeful for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have just covered four paragraphs of this document and there's so much more to say, even on the introduction. So I am now not making any prediction on how many episodes it's going to take to get through this. But I think that the timing of this coming out is so exciting. And I am really loving not only everything in this document, but all of the conversation that's happening around this encyclical. It's so hopeful, especially the fact that there are so many non-Christians who are really taking a serious look at what Pope Leo has written.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that other direction too, like we alluded to earlier on, is I think as Catholics, you can pretty quickly dive into the Luddite land. And that's where I think Pope Leo was pretty clear, and we'll cover it, I'm sure, in future episodes, where he said that's not the answer. The answer isn't throw the tool away. The answer is educate yourself with the tool. Be better at the tool. You know, take and invest time in it and have your own kind of piece of it so that we're informing this thing the right way and using it appropriately. And I think that's good too. So to your point, you've got non-Christians that are reading this encyclical as well. And they're thinking, wow, you know, there is something, you know, technology isn't just this sort of binary, doesn't have a personality. And so we can't say it's good or evil, but it's like, well, actually, yeah, we have an opportunity for it to be really good and really beneficial for humanity. And shouldn't we take that opportunity and use it for the common good? And I think that's a really good place to start.
Yeah. And also the fact that the church has something to say about the modern world.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not just this institution that's standing off there saying, okay, well, here are all the rules that were given to us 2,000 years ago, and we're just going to keep enforcing all these ancient rules that we don't even understand anymore. But that the church has something to say in every age.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, just kind of bringing back to the top of the podcast, you know, ever ancient, ever new, I think is a powerful... It's a powerful motto for us going forward, especially as a church, you know, especially as the Catholic Church is, yes, we are ever ancient, you know, we lift our eyes toward the incarnate word, you know, 2000 years ago, who became flesh, but it's ever new. It's always sort of re-enchanting us, bringing us back into the reality of humanity in this day and age and in every generation that we're finding ourselves in. So it's a really, really exciting stuff.
Yeah. And going back to the series that we did on the history of science, we would not have all the stuff that we have today if it weren't for the church.
That's right.
It was the church that was the backer of scientific discovery for centuries. It was the church that created the university system. It was the church that created so many of the early hospitals. We would not understand as much of the world that we do today if it weren't for the church.
That's right. Yeah. There's always throughout history that opportunity of the church standing for, you know, and this is what's different than Rerum Novarum a little bit, because it'd be fun to do a comparison and contrast of that. During the Industrial Revolution, it's like, okay, how do we as a people and we as a society support the working man? You know, and here in this encyclical, you're kind of seeing the church coming back to the forefront of science and technology, saying we can help shape this and mold this. And for many, many years moving forward, this isn't doom and gloom, but this is a progress of moving forward to that kind of fraternity and that fraternal coexistence that Pope Leo was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a great look at just the beginning of the introduction. So, as I said, we are going to be diving deep into this document, Magnificat Humanitas, and what this means for the future of mankind, what this means for how Catholics should look at technology, but also, as we said, how people in general should look at the church and the role that the church has in the world. And so I hope you join us next time for our next episode. We will be continuing to look at the introduction to Magnificat Humanitas. But before we go, I want to remind you, if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. And we actually have some new designs that just went up a few days ago that I have to say, in my humble opinion, are pretty cool. And if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic had gone up, and any financial support you can give us would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join as a monthly supporter. And as I said before, our brother Cesar is currently looking for a job. And so if we can throw some money toward him in this tough time that he's going through, that would be a great help as well. But I want to thank you for joining us. You guys, all of you who are in our prayers, please pray for us and join us again next time. All right. God bless.
System shut down.